Welkom bij de Star Wars podcast. May the Force be with you en veel plezier.
Een hele goede morgen, middag, avond, nacht, Bright Suns en Rising Moons en welkom bij deze zeer speciale aflevering van de Star Wars podcast. Je hoort en ziet het al, geen Mark, geen Quinten, geen Kimberly, geen Gerard. Gerard moest Darth Vader dingen doen op Comic-Con bijvoorbeeld en Mark was ook daar een beetje in de buurt iets aan doen. Quinten en Kimberly zijn gewoon compleet verhinderd en daarom dacht ik, ik ga iets speciaals doen voor al onze kijkers en luisteraars. Daarom heb ik vanavond voor jullie een interview met John Stocker en dat is een man die vroeger in de Droids en Ewoks cartoons een stem insprak. Hij was de broer van Wicket. Dus dat is een leuk vooruitzicht voor vanavond. Het is daarom een andere podcast dan normaal. We hebben dit keer geen nieuws, we hebben geen quiz, we hebben geen 20 questions. Want ja, mezelf vragen stellen, dat is ook een beetje raar. Maar we hebben dus wel een heel tof interview voor je klaarstaan. Dus laten we daar gewoon snel naar door over gaan. Ik presenteer jullie John Stocker. Misschien ken je ze nog wel van vroeger, de Droids en de Ewoks tekenfilms. Ze kwamen in de jaren 80 op tv en staan inmiddels op Disney+, zodat ook een nieuwe generatie met deze tekenfilms aan de slag kunnen gaan. En we hebben een Droid of een Ewok in onze studio zitten vandaag. John, could you maybe introduce yourself to our listening audience?
Yes, I will. I'm John Stocker. I know you're focused on the Ewoks and Droids, but I have a fairly long list of credits. I've been in the voice acting and the on camera as well acting game for coming up to just over 55 years.
Wow.
I know.
Impressive.
I say wow myself occasionally. I can honestly tell you it's been a great ride. I'm still working still loving it. That's the best part. I'm at the stage in my life now is if I don't like it, I won't. But yeah, there's very little I don't like. You know, you make a few bucks, you have a good time, meet somebody new, it's all good.
Nice. Yeah. And how did you get started as a voice actor? Was it something you always wanted to do, or did you guys roll into it?
Well, I always wanted to be an actor.
Yeah.
I remember my late mom telling me that I was 4 years old when I and I said I'm going to be an actor, right? And when I was in, I guess it was kindergarten, which was for 5 year olds, that was my first production that I was in. It was sort of Mexican Christmas with a piñata. Hanging the big basket of the big balloon full of gifts, and my line was, I took a hit at the basket, and my line was, "What about Juanita?" God knows how I remember that line. It was fine. How about Juanita? Actually, it's funny because I always thought if I ever wrote an autobiography, I want to call it "How About Juanita." It would be very misleading. But it would be appropriate for me. So that's when I started. And I was very, as I sort of mentioned a little bit of this to Carlo before, that's what I carried with me, those aspirations. I carried those with me all the way through. I did not, in fact, finish high school because I was too I failed miserably. I wasn't interested in math or physics or science or anything. I wanted to be an actor, and so I was involved in the school shows, writing them sometimes, performing, and then as soon as I got out of high school, I went into the profession sort of wholeheartedly. I did the usual, I painted doors and scraped walls and did a lot of jobs just to make some money, worked in a restaurant. You have to work in a restaurant if you want to be an actor. That's the one job you have to do first.
Yeah, that's what I hear everywhere.
You'll have to eat. Yeah, you have to do that. But, you know, hey, the food's good. Yeah. So, and then I was in the being in the restaurant, they asked me that there was a to be the entertainment manager as well. So I would hire people to come in, and then I decided to play. And to, so there was a little bit of acting on the edge there. And then I started to get some on-camera work, little bits and a little bit more. And my agent liked me, and I was gaining confidence. And then my first directing, my first voice acting job was mm-hmm. for a jeans company. I auditioned, and the guy loved me, and I had a huge and very, very rapid rise in popularity. I was very fortunate.
Yeah,
and it was also at the time when cartoons were just starting to be introduced into Toronto. Nelvana Productions, which was Ewoks and Droids, many other productions, and I got on with them as like a real go-to guy. They always asked for me. I rarely auditioned. And if I did have to audition, it was just to see if I'd have one, two, or three roles in the show. But I knew I'd get something. They were always, and that was great. And the Americans at that point, because of the huge gap like it is today between the Canadian and American dollar, a lot of the American companies, DIC, came up here. Saban came up to Toronto to do productions. They were very pleased with the quality of all of the performers,
and
with the studio facilities and everything else. So that went on at the same time. So it was that's how I got into it, and I haven't looked back since.
And
I don't
and
look
how,
back anyway.
No, it's always better to look forward, right?
It is.
And how did the involvement with the Droids and Ewoks series started?
Well,
how did you get involved with them?
Well, again, they called in a handful of performers that were kind of their go-to people, and then we. And that was Jim Henson as well, I believe. Wasn't he involved in, was that Henson Productions? Not sure. That may have been just before him. But yeah, but they called us in and said, okay, you're going to be in the series. Mm-hmm. Let's see what we can do. So, and again, as I talked to Carlo about, you'd see pictures of the various characters and say, okay, well, what do you think this guy should sound like? Because we were not being compared to the movie characters. And it was it's cartoon. Cartoons couldn't be as aggressive. And sorry. It's actually
no problem.
It's work. Bye. Okay. So it wasn't as aggressive as the sort of Ewoks were in the movie. Droids was a whole different thing again. Again, they knew we were going to be fine. And we were all very adaptable performers. They didn't like what we were doing. Try this, try that. So many of not just my earlier roles, but a lot of the people on the list, you'll see some people that I've worked with so many times back in those days, who were just part of the ongoing cast of so many productions. And if they wanted the character to have a deep voice, well, they would go with Don Franks. If they wanted him to have a silly voice, often it was me or Dan Hennessy or Tabby Johnson, or there were a bunch of people that they relied on, so they didn't have to go through the whole audition process. It was easy. They knew we would be reliable and give them a good performance. That's all they cared about. Today, nice. So much production is based on I think self-aggrandizement. It's like, you know, look at me. I'm auditioning. I'm auditioning 300 people for this role. Go ahead.
Yeah. So you just said that the cartoons were, well, cartoons. And when we look at the Ewoks, they were kind of aggressive teddy bears on screen, of course. I mean, they killed a lot of Imperials and they decided to make a kid's cartoon out of that. You got the role of Willy, who was the brother of Wicket, who was the main Ewok in the movie, of course. How did you get to his voice? Did you look at Wicket at all, or was it just
not the original one? They didn't want to do the original. They didn't necessarily care. They wanted them. I mean, we're appealing to a younger audience. Remember too.
Yeah.
Right. So you've got to be a lot gentler when you're dealing with kids. And if I'm correct, he talked like this. I mean, like that was his voice, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Is that pretty close?
Yep.
Amazing. The larynx still works. Yeah. So he was cute and he was nice. Oh boy. And he was kind of the silly little chubby little, you know, kid that I think everybody picked on in school. Right. Do you know, interesting thing too, before he was Willy, they called him Whittle. Did you know this? Know the story? They called him Whittle.
Okay.
But the slang word, Whittle is a slang word for peeing. I'm going to have a Whittle. So that didn't last long. I think we actually had even started some recording and I went, you know, we're going to change that. Of course, I never referred to myself as Whittle or Willie. That was just the name. But yeah.
Nice.
That wasn't very interesting, was it? Nah.
So you joined these cartoons. They're made in the 80s, and right at the moment that the original Star Trilogy already came out and was this massive, massive hit. What did it feel like to join a success like that?
Well, we were all kind of surprised that they would actually do something like this after it was like, and it was so different, really. It was obviously was an offshoot because they were called Ewoks, but they these are cute little guys and big, sorry, being silly. I was just going to say, it was really not, pardon me, in large part, it didn't really seem like it came from the same source, right?
Yeah.
You could have done this if you hadn't called them Ewoks and hadn't put those faces on them. You wouldn't have known that they were actually drawn from the Star Wars movie, right? And again, as I said, you have to modify for kids anyway. Everything's got to be very sweet and nice, especially in that era of cartoons where, you know, I mean, because around the same time, we were doing Care Bears, and Care Bears is all harmless, good over evil in a very gentle way. But that's kind of what so many cartoons were in that era, right? So they were not models in any way, and so that there was somewhat of a disconnect, right? It's not that we would say, gee, I better watch the movie to find out what his motivation is, because these had a life of their own. They were just different characters. They just happened to have the same name.
Yeah, right. And how did a typical Ewok or droid recording day look like for you?
If I recall correctly, and that's a long time ago, and I'll probably, get a migraine trying to remember it. But those were in the days where we stopped doing any ensemble work. I went in and did most of that on my own. I mean, animation today is recorded one at a time, unless it's people that talk. Say the same thing at the same time, or they're identical twins, or there's a reason to put them together. It's basically a cost-saving measure, right? Because if you bring in a whole cast, you've got to pay all of them for all day, right?
Yeah.
One performer, he gets the minimum, you get the 4-hour call, and we're done. But I think, Ray Jaffelis was the voice director on part of it. Ray was a lovely man. He was very, very gentle. Did a bunch of things with him subsequent to that. Not to kind of diss this project, but they're kind of the same. You go in, you get your lines. And if you're a good performer, you've read the entire script, so you know what the line before is and what the line after is, so that you are contextual, right? And you just record them, and you do what's called a pass, which is maybe part of a scene, or it's a situation that changes just before, and then you stop. Sometimes it's 3 lines, sometimes it's 12. It was pretty conventional in many of those, right? And you also have to remember that, you know, though we all loved our work, we weren't kind of dedicated to saying, well, I really want to capture this character. It was a lot looser than that. Once you had the voice, and again, I had mentioned this earlier, that when Carlo and I were talking sort of off mic, was that you just kind of go with the character. You find a character, you get a little bit of freedom, right? And if Willie would go, whoa, right? One of those things, and it worked, you'd throw it in somewhere, right? Or a speech, whoa, I've never seen that before, right? So we got a chance to sort of embellish the character, but that was the way animation was done. Still is in large part today. Well, certain performers are hired because of their improvisational skills, let's say, to enhance, you know. But it was pretty typical of how things were recorded.
And did a lot change in voiceover between those times and how they record shows today?
Well, today it's there isn't the same camaraderie, let me say, back in those days. If you were working with someone else, or someone was in the waiting room, we all knew each other. We were all kind of competing for the same jobs, but you know, there was a fraternal feel that, hey, you got that, man. Now that's great, good. You know, I'll get the next one, right? Yeah. Today, the whole general sense in voice acting, it's very competitive. Very competitive. It's one of the reasons, for me, that I don't mind that it's the bulk of it. My heavy, heavy workload days are behind me, right?
Yeah.
And I kind of tell people, because I still teach, so I've still got to, you know, I keep my spirits up. I mean, I think it's an exciting, wonderful profession, right? That you can really dedicate yourself to being excellent, and nobody dies if you're not, right? You know. We all want the best doctor, but you know, if you're not the best voiceover, no one's going to die. So we had a different kind of dedication to it. We wanted to do a good job, but we're also buddies.
Yeah.
And that brought a whole different feel to it. And just today, everybody wants something edgy. Well, they say they want something edgy, but they don't really. I disagree with the whole concept today. We want something different. No, you don't. Because different doesn't sell.
Yeah.
Same sells. It's been proven over and over and over again. So anyway, I'm waxing philosophical here. If I had to have a general favorite memory about those days, and Ewoks and Droids included, is that we knew each other. We could joke, we could laugh, and if somebody made a mistake, we would just mock the hell out of them, and nobody got offended.
Nice.
Right?
Nice.
Yeah, they were really good days. They were very, simpler, and I mean, again, I love my work. And I still love it today. I just love it differently.
Yeah. Before this interview, I took a look at your IMDb page, and I saw shows like Dino Saucers, X-Men, yes. Cops, Care Bears, Teddy Ruxpin, Sonic the Hedgehog, Alf. You were the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man in Ghostbusters. You were Ultron in Avengers, Tom Dalton in Lucky Luke, and you even were Toad in Super Mario Bros. You were a voice that was with me my whole life. what was your favorite character you ever worked on?
He's sitting behind me. That's Beastly from Care Bears. Beastly Care Bears. To me was the quintessential representative of the bad guy's sidekick. He was the, you know, like No Heart was this over the top evil, right? Yeah. And Beastly was just like his lackey, his like, Beastly, do the so-and-so. Okay. Right. And you had to love him. He was a beloved. He still is the most beloved character in Care Bears because he was always the poor guy that you felt so sorry for. Right. And that's a lovely role to play in cartoons. You know, and they try to say, well, you know, Beastly was just a regular, you know, went home. He had a wife, a couple of kids, his wife, you know, had dinner ready. You know, how'd you do today? Oh, no, it, you know, hit me in the head. That's pretty usual. Yeah, I know. It hurt, though. You know, how the kids, you know. Oh, yeah. Go to a parents' teachers meeting tonight? Okay. He just was just that poor guy. Basil and Babar was kind of the same. Rataxus was the evil, it was the evil rhinoceros. And Basil was just like, okay, you're a rhinoceros, you whatever you like, right? Hit me again, please. those characters are really wonderful. And Beastly was the quintessential one of all that. And I still get the most requests for Beastly. When I go to cons, when I go to conventions, I would say 50% of all my signings are for Beastly.
Wow.
Well, yeah, that and I voice directed Sailor Moon. So I get a lot of hits for that. The others all have their little pieces and stuff. Toad, Super Mario Brothers, the original Toad, I get a lot of requests. It's unfortunate that Ewoks and Droids is very niche. And, it's actually really nice to, for me, I look back and watched a little of it. Went, man, that was fun, you know? so it took me back to a little walk down the memory lane, as they say. But you know, and it's funny because with Willie, he kind of had that same kind of, okay, everybody feels sorry for me, or he had that kind of sad, a little bit of sad. Again, if you evoke people's sympathy, you're going to win as a character because they're going to love you. It's like watching any kind of movie. You gotta find somebody that you like in the movie to make the whole movie worthwhile. And you kind of, even if you have to wait for them to come onto the screen, we need that very personal connection with everything we do.
Yeah.
And so
that's true.
You know, if I were a part of it, you know, if I'm a part of that because of the characters I played, I'm a pretty happy guy.
Awesome. And if there was one character that you would love to voice that you didn't voice in your past, but the one character on your bucket list, who would the character be?
I know what it was. I know what it is too, because I auditioned for him and I didn't get it. I was really close. I think I was second. It's the character of Beetlejuice in the Beetlejuice cartoon.
Yeah.
And Stephen Wimmett. Wow. See, that gave me a headache too. That Stephen Wimmett got it. He was excellent, a nice, great guy. And again, today, you know, looking back, all these guys, the women were great. And he was better than I was. I wouldn't have admitted it back then, but he was better. But I believe I was second choice, you know. I would have liked to have been Beetlejuice. It was fun. The movie was fun. And he got to be wacky and insane. Anytime you do cartoons where you can just, it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And also based on a movie that wasn't particularly for kids, Beetlejuice.
Yeah. Right. See?
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. So these animated Star Wars shows, they all came out in the 80s. Yes. And we're still talking about them all these years later. And in our podcast, we even got people saying that they are literally watching them for the first time now, since they're now easily available on Disney Plus. And how does it feel to be a part of this still ongoing universe and people 40 years later are still discovering your Ewoks and your droids?
It's, you know, I got to tell you, I know it sounds really silly and really corny, but I can be really deeply affected by people who say, because sometimes they say, you know, I watched that and your character said something and it really, I was at a time in my life when da 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 da, and then you really made me feel great or you made me laugh. And it's like, I really, but it's really, I don't know, I get very sensitive when it comes to stuff like that. And I'm honored. I really, really am honored that I did something. You know, I mean, we all die and we're all forgotten, and that's okay. It's the way the world moves forward. But, you know, while I'm still alive and going to cons and hearing people say thank you for so-and-so, man, oh, man. And I do get people, you know, for Ewoks and droids who will say, gosh, I watched those. I liked it better than the movie. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
What can I say? I mean, I feel really, 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 really blessed that I had the opportunity to do something where I could make an impact on people's happiness and emotions. Boy, it's very rewarding. I'm desperately happy that I did it.
Nice. Yeah, the cool thing is something we talk about in our podcast as well, is we have so much Star Wars these days. We have the films, we have the series, we have the animated shows, but also the old animated shows, and everything can be a person's first entry into the Star Wars universe. And for me, it was the original trilogy, but children now might see the Ewok cartoon or the droids cartoon as our first introduction to Star Wars, and it will always be special to you. And even though people online might say, no, this one is better or that one is better, it will always be special to you because it was your first. And I think that has some true power over 100%. The content, the characters, and everything. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Then the final question I have for you, since we are in this new age of Star Wars and we have loads of animated Star Wars shows, would you ever consider returning to Star Wars?
Oh, as you mean as Willie?
Probably.
I would love it. I would love it. You know, it does in the world of cartoons and animation, it never happens. They don't bring back something. I mean, I could probably count on one hand and have fingers left over the number of shows that I've been involved in where, you know, they 5 years later, they decide to do something else. And usually, again, it will be with new performers, right? In this age, too, they want celebrities, right?
Yeah.
You know, they want Brad Pitt to do, they'll want Brad Pitt to do Willie. You know, or something. You know what I mean? But I would love to go back and do that. But I'd, you know what? I'd like better animation and like a little bit, not to denigrate it by any means, because we didn't, the quality is just what they had. It's what we had to work with. Digital now, my God, digital is amazing. If I, you know, and it picks up little nuances better. If I could do Willie now, I think I'd do probably a better job.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then this is us asking for Willie back, maybe as a background character in the Clone Wars or in Bad Batch or whatever. Dave Filoni, if you're listening, we want Willie back. Hashtag bring Willie back. It started today. Yeah. John, I want to thank you. John, I just want to thank you for being so open about your career and making us all fall in love with these characters when we were young and even when we were grown-ups. And I really like that you're still talking with a little dispassion about something you did all these years ago. And I really find it cool to see that you understand that you still have a big legacy in the Star Wars fandom, because people still talk about these cartoons and they mean a lot for a lot of people. And so not only thank you for this interview, but thank you to the contribution to our youth and our fandom. So a big thank you.
You're very, very welcome, and thank you. You had some very interesting questions, so pat yourself on the back. Sometimes to go back those all that time, it needs someone who can sort of reach in and get in. So thank you, too. It was a pleasure to be here, and I'm glad that I got to share.
Thank you. And then just to go and switch to Dutch, voor de mensen die Carlo de hele tijd in beeld hebben gezien op YouTube. Carlo, jou wil ik natuurlijk ook enorm bedanken. Carlo is degene die dit interview mogelijk heeft gemaakt. Carlo is te vinden via thenerdshepherd.com. Daar vind je alles over een beetje nerdculture natuurlijk. Interviews met bekende mensen, videogames, films, series. Dus Carlo, ook jij onwijs bedankt. Leuk dat je erbij was. En laten we dit vaker doen.
Lijkt me een goed plan.
Ja, toch? Then for now, I want to wish you all a happy night. And John, once again, thank you so much for your time. I hope you enjoy all the projects in your future. And we'll keep listening to your voice. Thank you.
Bye for now.